Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, Episode 316, King's Man, The Golden Circle.
I can't believe, you know, I'll give Joe a pass because of the situation for not being here for Mother, that's fine, but 316 being a wrestler guy, I just... Austin 316. Yeah, I mean, this is his one chance.
And a devout Christian.
Well, yeah, obviously, but we know his wrestling takes precedence. Yeah. You know.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm a little upset at him for this one, but we'll, you know.
I guess we'll allow
it.
Yeah. So before we get too far afield, let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Brad.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. So Brad has returned because Joe is still out. So is Dan. So. I guess that's about it. So just real quick shameless plugs before we dig in. Don't forget we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. It helps us tremendously. We greatly appreciate it. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. Join the League of Show Sharers. Share an episode with your friend and or friends if you have more than one, unless you're the star of Friend Request. just real quick, Friend Request. They don't have a Facebook page for that main character. How did they not do that? How do you
like
make
a
it
viral?
Real? Like, yeah, like to create a viral, like a viral page.
Yeah,
like,
that's,
you know, like that's just.
It might be against their terms of service it's so.
Then you reach out to Facebook and you say, we're a major movie. This is what we're doing. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, exactly. I don't even think they mentioned Facebook in the movie. I mean, it looks like
it's
Facebook.
It's clearly Facebook. But
they don't ever say it.
There's no logo. It's not actually Facebook.
But it's
Facebook.
The design of Facebook. And they say friends and friend request. And you know, I mean, but.
I'm guessing Facebook doesn't sign off on a deal where there's a bunch of people being murdered over their website.
Yeah, I don't know, because it's like, I don't think it, you know, you don't look at it and go, yeah, I should never be on Facebook again.
Yeah, I just don't think as a, like, I just think that's one of those corporate things that are publicly.
And it probably costs a lot less to not get Facebook.
I don't know, though, because, I mean, they say Facebook all the time in the social network. I doubt they cut Zuckerberg a check for that.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I don't know. Anyway, I just thought that was odd that there isn't, because, like, the character, what was it, it's Marina,
yeah,
and it's
Marina and Laura,
but they do their names like MA and then space RINA,
yeah.
Ooh.
Like, and so it's like, but so I went on Facebook and I found one. I did find a page, but it looks like it was created by
a fan,
like somebody who had seen the movie or something.
I was telling Kevin before you came back in was that I read on another review somewhere on that movie that the pseudonym for Marina's full real name is like a new friend or something like that, which I would have never picked up on like having watched the movie. But when you see it in text, they do something a little clever, like name her that way.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like her name is an anagram.
An anagram. Yeah. Not pseudonym. Sorry.
And that's, I'm just going to ruin the movie. So at the end of the movie, like the main girl that's been getting haunted, essentially,
who by the way is not a bad person at all, she doesn't
she doesn't do anything, she doesn't deserve anything that's been being done to her, but she basically gets possessed and now she's the new person. New
one, right.
But
no sense.
But now it's her name and it's, you see her Facebook page and it's Laura, but it's L-A or L-U and then A-R space A-R-A. So the whole thing with it being an anagram of new friend, like that's real cute, but when it clearly is supposed to be something that rolls from person to person, now it doesn't make any sense.
Right, yeah.
You know, see what I'm saying?
Like, and I didn't think it made sense at all. I walked out of that movie thinking, like, there was no resolution whatsoever to this girl who arguably didn't do anything wrong at
right.
all. And so she's being punished. All her friends are being killed. And then now she's got to live the life that Marina had because she unfriended her.
Yeah.
And I just...
I get it when it's like a revenge story. Like when you're a jerk and then someone gets like come up.
But she was the complete opposite of that. She was a nice character.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Yeah, but enough about that movie. So so anyway.
On to a much better movie, right, Tom?
Well, yeah, it's better than that, but yeah. So let's dig into Kingsman, shall we?
Sure.
We don't have Joe, so who's going to synopsisize this thing?
That's a good question. So I guess we should say the first film is based on a graphic novel by Mark Miller. It's
correct.
Called The Secret Service.
Right.
And the first film follows the beats pretty closely. I mean, there definitely are changes, but they keep a lot from the original graphic novel.
Well, and it's direct. It's like the creators of that comic book, they kind of launched their own production company so people would stop screwing up their movies, right?
Right,
so
right.
So it would stand to reason that they would do that. Like,
I feel like maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was for like the sequel, but I almost feel like Matthew Vaughn, the director, who he directed this one too, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Right. He's the guy that a lot of people say was the brains behind the Guy Ritchie stuff for a long time. And since he left to do his own stuff, we've seen a decline in Guy Ritchie films. So people are like, the math adds up. But I almost want to say that he had a hand with Mark Miller on the graphic novel, but I can't exactly remember. But so the first film is pretty close. It's a 6-part series and, you know, follows it pretty closely. But this is an original because he only wrote that first graphic novel. There's a sequel now, and I think it follows, like, there's one issue out now of the new one. It's called The Red Diamond, I want to say, and it follows, it's almost like a sequel to the film. So okay. they've kind of spun off, and since the film was so popular, now they're writing the new novel as a sequel to the film. So okay. the kid looks a lot like Egerton?
It's not Joel Egerton.
It's got to be Egerton because Joel Edgerton. So it looks like him, and I think they changed the last name because in the comic versus the first film, the last name for Eggsy has changed, and the new one follows him. So anyway, the point being is that there was no existing property. They wrote this script. Mark Miller, Matthew Vaughn, they wrote this for this film. So no source material. So we're getting a new concept. Now, I know a lot of people have been saying that it kind of feels like a retread of the first one. Is that how you felt, Tom?
I didn't feel it was a retread. I just felt it was kind of lazy. I felt like that first one, those action scenes were so good such a clever and unique way to stage and film action scenes.
Right.
And I feel like they really only did that one time in this movie. It literally comes in the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Yep.
And it's a lazy version of it. Like, it felt like a made-for-TV version of one of those sorts of action scenes. And even when the camera was weaving in and out of the fights and stuff, there were kind of like weird edits and you could just...
There were a couple really jarring ones.
Yeah, where I was just like, this is just lazy.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. And they had a very good budget comparatively. I don't know what the budget on the first one was. But
80, I think.
Okay.
So they had like 30.
And I feel like they got all this extra money and they spent it on stunt casting instead of spending it on effects. And I almost wonder if they overspent and then had to rein it back in because they brought in all these
was
names.
It Michael Gambon Dumbledore from Harry Potter is the leader of Kingsman after Michael Caine died in the last one. That's Michael Gambon, right?
I honestly don't know.
I don't know either.
I didn't know if Yeah, that's Dumbledore. You can, yeah. I can just tell by the way he talked. He looks a lot different without a big beard and the long hair and the pointy hat. But yes, I mean, you have him. You have, is that Halle Berry was the statesman?
You got Halle Berry.
Channing Tatum, obviously, was a big one.
I'm sure Elton John wasn't cheap.
Elton John being there. Julianne Moore's the bad guy.
Right.
Pedro Pascal from Game of Thrones, and he's on a Netflix, I think Netflix. I can't remember. I don't want, is it Narcos?
I think so.
So,
and like, you know, I know with the exception of Channing Tatum, none of those people open movies, you know. You know, none of them are A-list. Nobody's like, hey, let's go see the new Julianne Moore movie. Like, that's never been said until just now. But they're still...
But you got a lot of people.
But they're still name actors. It's not a no-name that's going to work for scale. You got to pay her a certain amount of money.
And I think she did a great job, too. Julianne Moore, even though her character was... bizarre, but
yeah, like, I like weird, I like bizarre, yeah. I really like the idea. So if you haven't seen the movie, Julianne Moore plays Poppy, and she is a drug lord that's responsible for all of the drugs around the world, and she is basically, she doesn't get any of the fame, she's a multi-billionaire or trillionaire, but she lives in the jungles, she's so secluded, no one knows she's responsible for all these drugs that everyone's taking, and so she's just this really deranged, like, crazy character that she's so sweet, but then she grinds people in meat grinders and is just super violent and crazy, but like, I like it, I like the character the way it's written, I like the way she played it, I think it's a fun character,
and
I like
to be
it
clear, it's not just like living in the jungle, I mean, she has this whole like 1950s themed like theme park kind of like place where it has like a bar and I can't remember the other establishments.
She recreated
there,
like a small town
there's
America,
like a, there's like a movie theater, like an old time bijou, and there's a, she has like a 50s style diner.
Diner, bowling alley. It's like, it's classic like 1950s America. She's recreated it because she can't leave. She's this huge drug lord and she has to stay secluded in the jungle, but she has built this town and I love it. I love the look of it. It's weird. I love the, you know, so I really like the way they created this character. And again, that's one of the reasons why I brought up that this is an original property. Sure. There's no, so because when I was watching it, I was wondering, I'm like, is there a graphic novel I didn't read, like there's a sequel and maybe these characters existed, but no, they created them for this film. So I really liked the look and the character, and I like Julianne Moore.
I do too.
She's a great actress. So anyway, but the film, it starts off with an action sequence, a car chase of sorts, and I guess I didn't remember that this guy was in the first film. I guess the villain of this, he had long hair in the first film.
Yeah,
he was one of the recruits, Kingsman.
Right. He made it to the last three, I believe, before he was let go.
And was he really in that scene they showed in the first one with the countdown at the end?
Yes.
So that really is him, the same actor?
Correct. Yep.
Okay,
same
he looks
guy.
So different.
I was wondering the same thing. I'm like, is this real or
retroactive,
are they retconning their own film?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I didn't remember that, but it sounds familiar now. And anyway, so Eggsy is leaving the Kingsman tailor shop, and he is basically held at gunpoint by this rejected Kingsman applicant, and he has three vehicles full of guys with guns and stuff that are, you know, kind of backing him up. So he says, you better get in the cab, and he gets in there, and there's this huge car chase action sequence, which I really enjoyed. Now, I'm not a big proponent of CG, but
I didn't like the CG was so awful in this movie.
There was a lot of scenes.
It was just like, I couldn't get into this car chase at all because it didn't feel real in any way, shape, or form.
But see, to me, it's stylized. It's a graphic novel, right? So like, for the same reason that someone may not like Speed Racer, I'm not comparing the two. I'm just making, you know, I just think it's similar in the way that Speed Racer looks very interesting with the CG and everything, but they're trying to replicate the feeling of the old cartoon. See, for me, even though I could tell it was CG and all that, Kingsman has a very stylized
look. I feel like the fights do. But the car chase didn't come across to me. It just came across as cheap.
Okay. But yeah. I really liked it. I enjoyed it. It's you know, he basically it's a really, I think, a really fun choreography that, yes, there's a lot of CG, but Eggsy is fighting this guy in the cab, and then the guy is going out the window, and he has this mechanical robot arm, so he loses an arm in the sequence of events in the first film, and so he has this robot arm that he's punching with and tearing things apart, and he's grabbing the ground. And
when they show that later, the flashback where he's laying there and his arm is ripped off, that is like the worst Photoshop I've ever seen in my life. It is so
I don't recall.
It was so bad, because like, his arm is like 3 feet away from him, and it—I mean—it looks like someone's using color forms. you guys are probably too young to remember that. Yeah. They probably didn't have it. It was like they had this thing called color forms, where it was like you'd get like Batman color forms, and there'd be a background, it'd be like static cling, and they're like,
oh sure,
the
yeah,
Batcave,
and you stuck them onto
yeah,
the,
yeah
sure.
Mean, that's what it looked like to me. Oh, like that's funny. Was just—I was really caught off guard by how. How jarringly bad some of the effects in this movie
Interesting.
Were.
So I don't remember in the first film, though. It's been a little bit since I've seen it, but did they show him losing an arm in the first film, or was that kind of a retcon? Does anyone remember him losing
an
arm?
I don't remember. I refreshed on the movie before because I knew I was going to go see Kingsman, so I watched it over the weekend, but I don't recall what exactly happened. I do remember their interaction above the party before the big countdown.
Yeah, I do remember now that he kind of holds him at gunpoint and he's working for Valentine.
Yeah, but I don't remember what exactly
happened. Well, because I didn't... You know, and I didn't watch the trailers. I didn't know that this character was going to come back. So I, at the point of time that I watched the first one, I had no idea to even pay attention to those little tiny details. Like,
sure.
I knew that he maybe knocked the guy out, but that he lost an arm. I wasn't, people's heads were blowing up. Like, I'm not noticing
there's
who's
a lot
losing
going
a limb.
On, yeah.
And,
right.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, but he's sticking his arm out the cab when Eggsy is pushing him out the window and he's scratching the pavement, but then the tides change and Eggsy's out the cab, and I call it the cab because it's a taxi, but that's what they call it, so right, it's just sure. Yeah. But then he goes out the door and he's hanging on and there's traffic and he's like, they're doing the slow motion thing where he's jumping over stuff and it's slowed down and then he's on top of it. I thought it was a really cool stylized scene, so I get that. You know, it didn't look, it wasn't realistic looking CG, but to me, I took
just it. Just to be clear, it wasn't the inside of the cabs, the inside of the car stuff that I thought looked cheap
sure.
and took me out of
it. No, it's
it was,
him hanging from the door. And stuff.
It's not even that. It's the actual cars moving through the streets. They look like. They just like. It. They were sliding around the street. Like,
I thought it was cool the way it drifted around like the circle. Right. Oh, I thought it was so cool.
I just thought it, I think it, I just, it all looked really fake
our
to me.
Our screening froze when it, when he dived into the water for the escape, and the, our screening froze. So they had to reset it. We had to watch that sequence twice.
Oh,
and
I hate
when as Kevin said, when he's sliding through, like from that aerial shot and doing that kind of S curve, like I thought it was, it looked great, but
yeah. See, to me, I thought it looked awful.
Yeah, like, I don't. You know, I mean, for this movie, I will just say to preface this again, I really enjoyed the first film. I wasn't expecting high art, although the first one was really solid. It's a great movie, but I was expecting action and comedy and everything. I wasn't really expecting it to be great. I was expecting it to be fun, and for me, it hit a lot of those marks. I do have complaints, and we'll get into them as we go to them, but. Things like that, like the action sequences and the CG, like, I don't know. They were fun to me. I really enjoyed them. I don't know what it was, but it worked for me in this scene. But they get to the end of this big chase, and he ends up taking out the bad guy, and his arm is left hanging from, like, the... I don't even know what that's called. The bar is what I call it. The thing you hold on to in your car when someone's going around a corner or whatever. Yeah. But his hand is left hanging on there, and Eggsy has to make an escape because the police are after him. So obviously the Kingsmen are this secret organization, and they don't work with law enforcement. So they're cruising through the street and blowing things up. He ends up launching a missile, which again I thought was neat, which a big missile went up in the air and then broke off into three smaller missiles and blew up the three cars that were chasing him. Yep. And then he has to make an escape, so he goes into an underwater escape tunnel that's under a pond. So he escapes under there. He ends up getting away with it. The police are like, where'd they go? But then he has to go to this is the birthday dinner, not the dinner with the family. That's the next day, right? Yep. So it's the first one. He's going with his friends. I want to call them mates. I feel like I transform into Brynn because they talk. I mean, the movie is very English in the way that the actors are for the most part, and they, except for when they go to Kentucky. But you know, all this stuff that takes place, you know, in the beginning, you know, it's very British. It's
right.
Just the way they talk and everything. So it's funny. I saw it last night too, so it's fresh in my head of the dialogue and everything. So anyway, he goes to his friend's house and they're doing a birthday celebration, and he doesn't want to be late for that. So the only way to escape out of this tunnel without going the way they came out and having the police find him is to go through like a septic or sewer system, and he ends up crawling through it like Andy Dufresne did, and he ends up going home, and we find out that he is in a relationship with the princess from the first film, and they live together in Galahad. He's Galahad, right?
Correct. Yep.
Galahad's Harry, Colin Firth's character, who Colin Firth, Colin Firth's character who we saw die quote unquote, in the first film, he lives in that apartment. So they live together there. They leave from there. But what we see when they cut back from him after he goes into that tunnel is that that hand is being remotely controlled, and the taxi cab that they're in has like a computer system that the bad guy's trying to hack in during the fight, and he never gets to do it. But the hand comes alive and goes into the system and hacks it and finds all the sensitive information of the Kingsman. Yep. So that's what sets everything off, that while they're at this dinner scene with the parents, Eggsy has the special glasses that they wear in the first film and in this one as well, that computerized, they show data and they can talk to other Kingsmen through them. And his friend ends up putting on the glasses while he's dog sitting, and he is about to use the lighter that we know from the first one is a grenade.
Yep.
He finds his office and his arsenal. And so, you know, there's that comedic beat with the family where Eggsy's meeting the royal family of the princess for the first time. They're having dinner together and everything's going great. He's getting fed information by the other agent so he can answer all the questions the dad has. But then when he sees his friend through the glasses with that grenade lighter, he's like, put it down, and yelling at him. And you know, and of course it's like the family's like, what the hell's going on here? But
God, I hated this scene.
Did you? You didn't like the,
this is like, is this an episode of Alice? Like, what are we doing? Like, this is, it just was very like lousy sitcom.
I thought it was funny to me at first, but after the movie was over, I thought I could have done without the whole Eggsy and Princess thing the whole time. Like, I mean, he got the girl at the end of the first movie, but this movie was very much his story and adding more more to that with him and was it Tildy? Princess Tildy?
I think that's what it is.
And
but like nobody really, if this movie had picked up without her, nobody was going to be like, oh, but I was so enraptured with their relationship. Why did it have to come to a close? It's, you know what I mean? Like, nobody cares.
But I think it served the purpose. From my point of view, it served the purpose of, you know, some pretty important plot points. Like, a lot of things are wrapped around their relationship, her hanging up on him because he doesn't want to commit to marriage, then her going and, you know, being distressed, and he can't get a hold of her, and then she ends up doing the drugs, which then puts her in danger.
No, I mean, she's ancillary, but she certainly, it drives some of the story.
But I think
they could have come up with a better plot without her.
As a Kingsman, he was still going to try to save the world anyway. I think that was just more to like more attachment to Eggsy to have her involved in it whatsoever. Because I don't remember why. I mean, I realized she was stressed out because of the marriage thing.
Yeah.
But like thinking back now, because it's been a week since I've seen it, like I don't remember why she was even took the drugs and put herself in that.
Well,
because they
take drugs. I mean, they like you in the scene where his friends come over, you see all the weed on the table.
Okay, so it's all,
you know,
she was just stressed because of the fight. So I mean, you know, she was smoking a doobie to relax. Like that's
okay.
And then we later find out, we'll just spoil it now, but the plot of this, the Julianne Moore character, her whole plan is in order to be recognized, because she's this megalomaniac that has all this money and power, but no one knows her name. She wants the world to know that it's her, and the way she does that is by tainting all the drugs. So she's responsible for the world drug trade, and she puts...
And that was a plot point that really... And I know you can't take these movies too seriously, but like they were like, oh, she has a monopoly on the world drug trade. So she... cornered the world's market on every,
the entire world, every drug,
illegal narcotic that is sold, and the two best Secret Service agencies in the world had never heard of her.
Don't forget crystal meth.
Yeah,
she's the one that's making the crystal meth. The backwoods of the jungle.
Which not only that, but you can make crystal meth on your own.
That's like, what I'm saying. I mean,
not only do people, but you don't even need a lab. Like it's, you can shake and bake it.
Like, I just thought it was kind of funny. Like they show that as like kind of a humorous, because like I guess the guy's doing it. One of Eggsy's friends is doing it, and so they're talking about the six drugs that she has cornered that are tainted, and the last one's like in crystal meth. And I'm thinking, I'm like, she makes crystal meth and distributes it. Really? Like. That doesn't seem like a jungle drug trade. I get what you're saying, too. And again, there are things that I had problems with. It's not like I just loved this movie and whatever. I actually was fairly entertained by it, and I gave it a pass on a lot. But there were things like that that didn't make sense. Also, I will say, while we're there, we go to the jungle, and Poppy, the main bad guy from the first one that we talked about, he has lost his arm in that original fight, and she ends up replacing it with this super powered,
with the super duper robot arm.
Yeah, not only is it a robot arm now, and I mean, this is,
but it has Wi-Fi.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I guess the last
one had a hotspot.
I guess the last one had to have Wi-Fi to send all the information.
Yeah, yeah. No, this one had a mobile hotspot, so you don't even need Wi-Fi. It's always connected. That was the thing.
Oh.
Yeah. So, she gives him this super-powered arm, and they're at the bowling alley, right? And so, she bowls, I guess, or we allude that it's his turn, and she, after she straps on this huge mechanical arm, which does this CGI thing like in a Fast and Furious movie when they go through the car engine and you see everything spinning up, like they do the close-up of the arm and all the gears moving and all that stuff. I mean, I thought that looked pretty cool, but the point is that he tests out the arm by throwing a bowling ball through the wall of the bowling alley, making an explosive huge hole in this wall of this alley, right? But then the rest of the movie, when him and Eggsy fight and he punches Eggsy,
nothing like
that. He just brushes it off.
Yep. Yeah.
This is the thing I had the most problem with. And again, I know that you're not supposed to think too hard in an action film, whatever. I'm fine with...
But follow your own rules.
Yes, that is exactly what I was going to say. I'm fine with superhero movies, people that have superpowers, people that can fly, people that can do all these amazing things. That's great. But when you establish the rules that she gave him a beefy arm because his first one failed and now this one's supposed to be superpowered, and you made a hole through what, concrete, steel, whatever that wall was made of, but then you punch a human. Eggsy's a human. He's not a superhero. Every time he fights with them, he punches him with that super robot arm that you introduced, you know, Chekhov's gun in the first act. And it never affects Eggsy.
No.
He shoots the gun like a missile, like Baymax's hand in Big Hero 6. He shoots the arm at him. He picks him up and slams him to the ground. He straight up punches him with it. And Eggsy gets up, like, not even to appear bruised.
Right.
I mean, he put a hole through a wall of a building. He should have hit him and Eggsy should have exploded.
Yeah.
Right. So that was one of my huge complaints. And other people may think it's silly, but again, like Tom said, follow your rules. Don't show that. Why didn't Julianne Moore just replace it with a normal arm? Be like, oh, you lost your arm. Here's another one.
Right.
Like, don't introduce the super arm if.
Yeah, because I mean, he was already, when he was in the car and they're fighting and he's got this metal robot arm, and I'm like, how is he shaking this off? And then they give him a better, tougher robot arm, and I'm just like, oh, come on.
The only thing I can think of was the reason they gave him the super arm, I'm guessing, was to do all the cool things. Like, the original arm couldn't shoot like a grappling hook and do all this, so they wanted that big action set piece in the end, so the arm had better features. But I don't know, make the original arm have the features. Just don't make it beefy. Just make it a cool robot arm, right? So anyway, that was very frustrating to me as the movie went on, because I was just like, no. Sure. Eggsy should be just exploded, right? So anyway, she gives him the arm. We also find out what this golden circle is. So her underground group is known as the Golden Circle, where all the initiates literally have a golden 24-karat gold. It's almost tattoo-like, but they pour like smelted gold onto their chest in a circle.
Like liquid hot gold.
Yes. Yeah. So we notice that the bad guys throughout the film, Eggsy and the other Kingsmen and the Statesmen, they notice that all the bad guys have this golden circle. So this is the group that we're fighting throughout the film.
And I love when at one point in the movie, when they're finally like trying to track down the golden circle, and they're like online. She's on, like, I'm seeing rumors that the golden circle hit. I'm like, You're the Secret Service, and you just literally Googled something to find out what was going on in the drug world. Are you kidding me? And like, and again, I know that this is one of those things that irritates me, because fans of the movie is like, you're taking it too seriously. But again, like, you've created this world. You've told us that this agency is so brilliant and so four steps ahead of everybody.
Right.
And now, and like, I don't see anything about this character that makes me think that she's smarter than the Kingsmen. So I don't get, you know what I mean? You know, like, I don't get that. I don't think that she's even smarter than they are.
No.
It feels just like
weird that she stumbled across the information.
Yeah.
And it wasn't in their top secret Kingsman database.
Yeah.
Now, is the actress the one, the initiate from the first film, or is she just a different Kingsman? Like
Roxy?
Yeah.
Yeah. She was in the first.
She
film.
Was the
she's
one,
the one
that,
who actually won or like,
yeah,
was
she's
appointed.
The one that with him was,
yes.
They were like the top two.
Correct.
Okay, great. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that was the same one. So yeah, they do have a lot of people return. But anyway, with the data, so what we find out, the big deal, the entire plot, aside from the whole drug tainted thing, is that with the database that the Hand hacked in the beginning of the movie, they found the address of all the Kingsman agents, all the headquarters, so they have bases all over the world, and they all get blown up.
Yeah.
And the actor that plays Dumbledore in the Harry Potter movies, I think that's Michael Gambon, who played the second Dumbledore. He is the new head of Kingsman. Michael Caine played him in the first one, right? Not the same character, but the top agent or whoever's control of that London agency. So you have him in for a small role. And again, I think that is kind of stunt casting because you have him in one scene and he gets blown up. But he's a pretty... I wouldn't say it's not like he opens a movie, but he's freaking Dumbledore in Harry Potter. Like, you didn't need him to get blown up in one scene.
Yeah, you spent a little bit of money on that.
You did, absolutely. So he gets blown up, and you see the, you know, when they're at the meeting at the table, just like in the first one, all the holograms of the people around the table, and one by one, they're getting taken out. Poppy launches these missiles.
Which is another thing that looks cool, but makes no sense.
Why is
that? So each of those guys, I assume is in another empty conference room that sit in a hyper specific chair, so when this other guy puts on glasses it looks like they're filling up the exact same like I said, it looks cool but it makes no sense.
It's supposed to be like the round table, right? Because all the names, all the code names are based on Arthur, and it's a conference table. It's not round, but it's a metaphor or whatever, you know. They're trying to be a modern King Arthur is what Kingsman is. It's the Knights of the Round Table.
And I get that, but it's just like that divide. Like, that's a lot of that's a lot of money and effort to go to for something that you could just like have them all be on Skype.
I totally hear what you're saying. That's something that would, in a movie like this, that does not cross my mind for a second. But I get your complaint.
But that's the problem though, is like that once there's that
the
chip,
crack,
it's like you start asking yourself these questions.
You're chipping away at everything. Exactly. Yeah. So they all get blown up and including his friend that's dog sitting. His dog.
They John Wicked him.
They did. You don't ever mess with that. Ooh, a Kingsman John Wick crossover. Interesting. I would love to see the fight choreography of the John Wick guys in this film, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the stylized stuff, but more specifically from the first film.
Yeah, I love the stylized stuff when it works.
Yeah.
I just didn't think that it worked in this movie.
It's neat. But, you know, I just went back and watched John Wick 1 and 2. I think I watched 2 since the first time in the theater. 1 I've seen a bunch of times. But I watched those back to back. And, man, just remind you that, you know, the directors of John Wick are the stuntman and the stunt choreographer for Keanu on The Matrix. So if you didn't know that, that's why those movies are so good. These are the guys that did The Matrix stunts, and they obviously are very talented when it comes to that stuff and the fight choreography. And the choreography is so good in those movies. It's Keanu is a martial artist and he does a lot of his own stunts, but the fight scenes don't do quick cuts. They're just such solid choreography. I would love to see that kind of if they could kind of combine the two elements, it might be kind of neat.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they blow up his house. They blow up Galahad's apartment. They blow up the dog. They blow up the friend. And they blow up all the Kingsmen. So it's literally Kingsman is now comprised of, the other agent, the girl.
Roxy, which is such a shame, too, because I was talking to Steve the other night, too, about it, how she's a great character. Like, you watch the first movie and she definitely deserves to get to where she gets to, and for her to go out like that was incredibly weak. And
especially because it didn't, like, it's one thing to kill off a cool character and have it have some emotional resonance. I have no idea what's making that noise. But it's one thing to kill off a character like that and it has some emotional resonance or impact, but it didn't. It had zero. I mean, it was just,
she died with everyone else.
Part of me thinks it's hopeful thinking, because I think that there's probably going to be a third movie based on how this one
ends. I think so.
That there is a chance, since it was an off-screen death, they'll do something ridiculous like they did with Colin Firth, which we'll talk about soon.
Yeah, that was also a bridge too far.
The kind of sci-fi technology aspect of it. So everyone ends up dying except for Andy Garcia, who plays... not Mark Strong. I think Mark Strong is like the new Andy Garcia. If you look at all like the original roles, like that when you first saw Mark Strong, he was in the Andy Garcia roles. They kind of look similar when they both had bad hair. Like, it's just like, it's like, so I, so I think anyway, from? I was going to, yeah. Anyway, so I, that's how I think of Mark Strong. At least I did when I first saw him, like, oh, it's not Andy Garcia. So anyway, Mark Strong plays Merlin, and he was not at home during this missile launch that Poppy launches. So it is Eggsy and Merlin, Merlin are the only two. They're the entire Kingsman. So Eggsy is getting emotional, and Merlin, who has always had his crap together, you know, we found out in the first one, like, you know, he's a nice guy, but he's serious. He doesn't mess around. He adheres to the Kingsman code, and they don't get emotional. He has a mission. He has a job to do. And so he tells Eggsy that, you know, to snap out of it. Right now, you need to complete your mission. And then when it's all done, you can shed a tear and in private, you know. So, sure. Like, keep your stuff together. Eggsy agrees. So they end up going to the what is – do you remember what the plan was called? It's like the their fail safe, whatever they
Operation Doomsday or
Doomsday Protocol. Yeah, Doomsday Protocol. Yeah. So they have this Doomsday Protocol in place, which is they go to a tasting room. Kind of reminds me of John Wick and some other movies, like when they go to the sommelier for the tasting, and it's a weapon.
Sure.
You know. So they go to a wine tasting room, I guess, and they say, hey, we're from Kingsman, we need room 2, and they let them in, and they go to their little scanner that opens up a part of the wall, and it is a safe. And so they end up getting into the safe, and all that's in there is Statesman whiskey.
Yep.
And so they, it's a cryptic clue, and neither of them knew what was in the safe, right? They just know that there's this Doomsday Protocol. Mark Strong says that none of his predecessors have ever had to use it, thank God. So, you know, that's just to let you, it's not like they have this big instruction manual. It's just like, Doomsday, open the safe. So they end up going through this bottle of whiskey, and
I thought it was funny because the Doomsday, meaning that, like, we're just going to put down this bottle of whiskey, we have nothing else,
like,
to,
there's nothing else to do, to like, do, just, you know, get drunk, like, and enjoy, yeah, the
enjoy
ride.
Enjoy this bottle, but then...
But then, at the same time, so, like... And so then he realizes that it's Statesman. It's kind of like Jack Daniels, and it's like brewed in Kentucky. And so he realizes we're Kingsmen, they're Statesmen. This is a clue. We need to go to Kentucky where, yeah, they make this. And but I, like, again, so there's a whole other parallel Secret Service agency, and neither of them have ever heard of it.
Yeah,
it makes sense for Eggsy not to have heard of it, but you would think Merlin may
it doesn't. It doesn't make sense for him to not have.
Well, he's still brand new to the.
But not at this point. It's been 2 or 3 years that he's been.
A year.
You see that he's one of their top tier agents, okay, and nobody's ever mentioned, oh, by the way, we have an equivalent in the. I mean, do you really think you can join MI6 and not know about the CIA?
Yeah, but I will say, though, so later on we find the connection was that when these two organizations were found, the Statesmen used the Kingsmen as their tailor. Like, there was a connection, but they are not sister companies. They're not connected in any way. They're not.
I know. I mean, in the same way that, like, MI6 and the CIA aren't officially connected, but they're aware of each other.
Kingsman's completely unknown by anyone, like any police organization. The public doesn't know what Kingsman is. Like, these are secrets.
I even get that Statesmen aren't aware of Kingsman, but okay, Kingsman should be aware of Statesmen.
Yeah.
Because somebody in the organization is.
Yeah. I would think that.
And I can only assume that Statesmen have a Doomsday Protocol where they open it up and there's a suit.
They did. No, know? They said it
right
in the movie.
So, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you
it's
know.
Umbrella.
That's right. And so clearly they're aware of each other.
But no one's ever looked in the safe. Like, what we gather from the movie.
But someone put it in the safe.
No, long time ago. I mean, none of Merlin's predecessors ever opened the safe.
These people
didn't either. They're not old enough to. This is something that goes back.
These are still supposed to be, like, brilliant spies and detectives, and they're completely unaware of a parallel organization.
I get it. The entire point was to get the conflict and the mystery and basically what happens is they end up going on, like, the whiskey tour at the Statesman in Kentucky, and they break into their storage, their cellar or whatever, where it's housing all the bourbon barrels, and they end up hacking it with their watches. So it's like a DNA retina, whatever, like advanced
biometric.
Yeah. That's what it is. So they're obviously like, okay, something's up here, because why would a distillery have a biometric scanner? So they know there's something to this clue, and they're in the right space. They end up going and they're trying to break into this this aging whiskey barrel, but Channing Tatum steps in and says, you know, what are you doing? And so the whole point of this and why the organizations for the story don't know each other is so that Channing Tatum can fight with them and then take them and tie them to chairs and question them and basically, you know, it's just a build up this whole
but
thing.
But I would also say that, like, even if you accept the fact that they don't know each other, when they get there and they see what this is and they're still like, I don't know what all this means. Really? They have the exact same name that you do.
Yeah.
You are Kingsmen. They are statesmen. You are in the States. They have the same sort of
biometric scanners
technology that you have. Like, how effing stupid are you people?
Yeah,
at some point, like we're, they can't tell us on the one hand that these are the best and the brightest and the smartest and they figure everything out and they're nine steps ahead of everybody, but they're also really dumb.
No, I do think it was a bit of a stretch. I agree. Like, getting to this point to where I get that, okay, you solve the clue, and even if you don't know each other, once you get there and you see the evidence, like, you might be like, no, wait, we're like the same thing.
Right. Statesman,
London.
Kingsman.
Yeah, right.
King is England, States is States. Like, it's a one for one. Like, yeah.
Yes.
The analogy couldn't be any simpler if it was Mother.
What's your take? You're being quiet over there, but I know that you like this movie.
I did. It didn't bother me. You know, the more I sit here and discuss it with you guys, like, I understand your perspectives of it.
I'm the same way. This didn't ruin it for me either.
It didn't bother me at all. We're gonna start getting into where it did bother me.
Yeah.
As we move along, but at this point, I'm still on board with everything. That's
happening. It didn't ruin it for me, but it did kind of rub me the wrong way. So I get that it was a little silly. And I also think this movie had like a 2-hour and 20-minute runtime.
It did not need to be 2 hours.
Like,
I
would have 2 hours is long, but I would have at least shaved 20 minutes off of it. Yeah. So there are some things
that's where I go back to the whole relationship. I didn't think that they could have probably cut that and
maybe don't do the whole dinner scene and whatnot.
Yeah.
So they end up getting into the lab and they find out Halle Berry runs in, and at the last minute before he's about to light them their whiskey doused clothes on fire as they're tied to these chairs, she says, oh, their story checks out. This is where she says, we went to our doomsday safe and opened it up, and there's an umbrella that says Kingsman, and so their story was that they found in their doomsday safe the whiskey bottles at Statesman. So the story's lined up, they let them out.
I also didn't like the fact that, like, they just opened their own doomsday safe on a whim. Like, what's the point of it being a doomsday safe then? Like, that's
right.
You know, like, I know these are little things, and I think if I had liked the other parts better, I wouldn't be asking these questions,
sure,
but I didn't, so I was just like, I was left to just be like, but wait.
Totally. It's probably the same thing with Hitman's Bodyguard, which I know, like, you fairly enjoyed. I hated it, and it made me mad. I picked apart everything in that movie because I hated it, and it's the same thing. When you don't like something, it's real easy to be irritated with the little details. Exactly. So, anyway, the long story short, they basically take them in. They say that your funds are ours. You know, we're going to help you out. You have access to our weapons and our people. They're all their code names, like Kingsman use the King Arthur stuff. All them, since they're a whiskey distillery, they all have alcohol names. So you're introduced to Whiskey, who is played by Pedro Pascal, who was on Game of Thrones.
Yep.
And
I thought he was great.
Yeah, he
I
is
really
good.
Hate what they do with this character.
Yeah. And then you've got Champagne, Jeff Bridges, who talks exactly like he talks. We mentioned, I think that was on the last episode, talks exactly like in True Grit, how he's been frozen for the last decade. So you have him as the leader. He's in that high role of controlling the statesman there. And you're introduced to Channing Tatum, who's Tequila. So he says, okay, hey, I'm Tequila. I thought the Channing Tatum stuff was, I like Channing Tatum as an actor. I thought he was a little corny in this movie. Like, I didn't really appreciate
his
role.
It's hard to gauge because, like, the movie's corny.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true. It didn't ruin it for me, but I was just kind of like, okay, I kind of could have.
I was surprised at how little they used him. Like, he was just a plot device.
Clearly they had him for 6 days,
right?
Yeah.
And they slammed,
same as Halle Berry,
right?
She sits in a room and on a computer like for the entire, she's in two sets,
right?
Yeah. Or one, you know, she's in their little thing with Colin Firth, who we find out Harry is still alive from the first movie. Dun dun dun. But
ugh.
So anyway, Jeff Bridges says you have access to all our people, and they kind of give him whiskey as a to go help him out with their mission. They basically at this point are having to recover the antidote that Poppy is going to, if the U.S. stops their war on drugs. This is where the big social commentary comes in about drugs and everything. And so the American president, the bad guy, obviously this is a liberal film. I mean, the writers of this film are on the left. And so the president is a anti-drug, war on drugs type of guy. And Poppy says, if you stop the war on drugs, if you legalize every substance, then I will release the antidote to everyone. So that's the mission they have to go on. But first, that big reveal is that when Channing Tatum is interrogating them, they see through like the two-way mirror that are it's weird they're called two-way mirrors, but only one way can be seen. I don't know if you've ever I guess it's just because there
you can see two. Well, I guess you can only but you can't see anyways on a regular mirror,
right? Anyway, so you see that he's like, I'm gonna count to three, and then you guys obviously are here on some mission to rescue this guy, and you're like, what are they talking about? And they turn on the window or whatever, and you see Colin Firth, Harry, shaving like in the mirror. And so they're like, what is this? You know, and I didn't know if this was just a trick the whole time. I heard that he was going to be in this movie, and I think I watched one trailer in the theater, but I thought maybe he'd be a robot because Poppy is very, she uses a lot of technology. Robot, yep. She has robot dogs and everything. I thought maybe he was replaced. I thought maybe it was a trick, just a head fake, and it was going to be,
headshot fake?
Yeah, headshot fake. So anyway, but no, come to find out, he's really alive, and what they use, Statesman developed for their agents, if you get shot in the head, they have like a gel pack that wraps around the head, and they inject a syringe of like blue and yellow from either side. They mix together, they heal the wound, and then they repair the neural pathways and the memories and whatever brain function comes with that.
This is so stupid.
I hated it. I was excited. I know you don't watch the trailers, but they reveal his return in the trailer. Yeah. And then in the promotional materials, like all over the theaters, you'd see the big posters with all the new characters, Channing Tatum and Pedro Pascal and Colin Firth. And it's like, how, you're curious now, how is he back? But he was like the sole, you know, the main character of the first movie. Yeah. And I think it would have had a bigger impact had nobody known that he was going to be in
100%. I mean, not only
is it tease at the beginning that it's a flashback,
like you see him initially in a flashback, and you would think, oh, like that's how they got
him. And that's what I thought too.
But I will also say it frustrates me that they bring him back in such a stupid way, and then they have him not be the character you like
exactly
for 90% of the movie. Sure. Like they have him be this, like, oh, I'm not really. Like it's just like if you're gonna do such a lazy cheat, then at least give us the character back.
Right.
Like I was of all the ridiculous things that I pick apart, I was prepared to turn a blind eye to this one until. They wouldn't let him be the character that you liked so much in the first
one. And then when you think that he is, they get to that big bar sequence that they call back. And they do it twice in the first movie.
Well, that's early on. That's
sequence.
Right where he gets revived, though. So, like, at that point.
I know, but it was such a. Yeah. I was so excited for him to lock the doors and start that scene. And then,
on the flip side, though, and I totally get what you're saying, and I'm not excusing it. I agree. I would have liked to have seen him more badass. But it's funny the arguments we make, though, because this was probably the most realistic thing. Because, first of all, he just woke up from this coma or whatever, but he only has one eye. He was shot in the eye, right?
No.
Depth perception. Yeah. You can't shoot. You can't, was the most believable thing.
No,
that
it was. But
then that's what you would give a pass because you want the badass scene. So it's just interesting how they go and they put thought into this and make it very realistic.
Yeah.
But
and
then
they
on other
put
things they don't
into anything,
it's
into anything else. Yeah.
So it's very picky and choosy because that's exactly what I thought last night when I left. I'm like, part of me likes the fact that, you know, he goes to do this thing, but the mug in the same scene from the first one flies by the head instead of hitting him in the head. He shoots a dart James Bond style out of his watch and it's supposed to stun the guy, but it hits him like it hits a monitor 3 feet away. Like it totally makes sense.
Right. Yeah.
But then it's like, but then you don't think about the whole robotic arm.
But then I even get the bar scene when it didn't, like when he's not good at it. And I liked how they did that because then Whiskey steps up and you see like all the cool stuff he can do. And like, it really irritated me.
The turn
with that character, because I like that character.
That character
was
awesome.
Great, and I love that he looked just like Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's funny. I didn't pick up on the fact that he was supposed to be Mexican. Like until they reference it at the end. Like I didn't
I mean, I know the actor is Pedro Pascal, but when do they mention that he's Mexican? I don't even remember
that. They mentioned at the end, it comes up somehow, I thought, that I'm trying to remember.
Because you know what's interesting? So if you watch Game of Thrones, Pedro Pascal has a very Spanish-sounding accent, right?
Yeah.
That actor, if you see him in interviews, speaks with an American, like... He isn't putting on an American accent for this movie.
Right. He's putting
him,
on
the, Pedro Pascal yeah. actually speaks with an English, yeah. I mean, American like accent.
I loved how he looked just like Burt Reynolds. Yeah. I wish that they had had him talk like Burt Reynolds if he has that capability. You know,
what's funny. I just because I don't watch the trailers, I didn't really even realize until the second scene I saw him who he was. At first, I thought it was Jeremy Renner. With a mustache on. I don't know why, and this probably goes back to my pseudo face blindness, but you know, he has a hat on, he has a mustache, and I think some of their facial features are similar. So at first I'm like, is Jeremy Renner in this movie? Is Jeremy Renner in everything nowadays? But then I'm like, oh, that's the guy from Game of Thrones.
I'm trying to think of what you thought of, because there's a movie where Renner rocks a mustache.
That's probably why
I can't think of what it is.
I think I've seen him with a mustache before, and so for some reason it had a callback. So just for the first time you see him, I'm like, Jeremy Renner in this movie? Like, oh no, that's not him, that's Oberyn Martell. Anyway, but yeah, I love that character. But what they end up doing with him is, see, you think the whole time, you think after a while, and it's alluded to by Harry, that he's like a double agent. Maybe you think he's working for Poppy, right? But they do something even dumber, I think.
Yeah.
If he was working for Poppy and he was a double agent, sure, we see that in spy movies all the time. I would even accept that, even though, again, I like the character. I don't want to see it, but fine, he's a double agent. He's not. He betrays them, and he ends up doing it on his own so that Statesman whiskey prices will skyrocket. He doesn't want a cure for drugs, because if all the drugs are wiped out and all the drug users are wiped out, you're just left with the alcohol drinkers.
Right.
And then Statesman will make more money. It's not like he owns Statesman. Like, it's just a really stupid motivation.
Well, it also had something to do with how his wife died, right? Like, I'm trying to remember.
Well, by drugs. It was druggies that killed her. So I guess that is a little bit better motivation.
Yeah.
But he really hits the point home that he wants Statesman stock to skyrocket.
Right.
Like,
I will say one of the things I think the one thing I really liked about the movie was the president's take on it was like, oh, you're going to kill all the drug addicts. Well, then I win the war on drugs and you look like the bad guy. And like, why would I cave to your demand? It's a ridiculous request.
I thought it was an interesting take.
And I believed that there would be the potentiality of there being a president that would have that take like rang true.
Well,
you know,
this movie would lead you to believe it's every Republican president.
Sure.
Ever. I mean, this is about as subtle as Aronofsky's Mother when it comes to this allegory here. I mean, you know, I mean, this is clearly their stance on the war on drugs, how silly it is, because they, who's that actress? She's so good. She was in Punch Drunk Love with Adam Sandler. She's been in a bunch of stuff. His assistant, the president's advisor.
Oh, I don't know her name.
I just can't remember her name. She's so good.
Yeah.
And everything. But she basically is the
voice of reason. Like, okay, these people are on drugs, but we don't want them to die. Like,
yeah.
That's,
and you find out later that she has the same affliction, like in the next scene. So it's
right.
Like, see, Mr. President, we're not all bad people. I mean, she's his closest advisor, and she has it. So that's the filmmaker's commentary on that. You know, the war on drugs is stupid. You have a lot of good people that also are dealing with stuff and self-medicate, and it doesn't make them a bad person. They're not all criminals,
right?
There's no, so that's.
But you know. I like that. Like, I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying that, like,
no, from a writing,
but from a writing standpoint
yeah.
I'm like, I believe that there would be
someone,
a politician that would be so calculating to go, you know what, you're solving problems for me right now. Like that, you know, and you look like the bad guy, not me.
Yeah.
And here's, now I've won the war on drugs. Think of all the money we don't have to spend on rehab, how many criminals it does take out. It will take out a lot of innocent people too, but it will also take out a lot of like violent criminals.
Right.
And so it's like, I thought that was a really smart take on how a politician would potentially react.
Yeah.
You know,
do you think that when other countries see that, do you think that makes America look really bad? Like, do you think people will understand, or do you think other countries will be like, yep, there goes those crazy Americans?
Every country has politicians like that.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't see it as much as a commentary on America.
Yeah.
As, because, you know, I think especially when this isn't just about weed. She also wants them to legalize heroin and cocaine, meth and cocaine. Yeah. Like that's, you know, like that's, I think even people that want weed legalized are like, well, we don't need to be legalizing heroin and meth. Like that's a bridge too far. And so, you know, so I really don't. I mean, every major Western industrialized world is having essentially the same social battle
right
at the ballot box.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, so I really don't see it as like, isn't America awful?
So that's the deal. So they end up going, it's Whiskey, Harry, and Eggsy end up going to Italy, and the way they get to Italy is he has to finger bang the bad guy's girlfriend.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know how to put that any more subtly. That probably is the most, right? I mean, is there a better way to put that?
Digitally manipulate?
Oh, well, there's one other way to say it. They go to a music festival, and they have a clue that the bad guy's girlfriend, they have intelligence that she'll be at this music festival. So Whiskey tries to hit on her. I like this little interaction. It ends up, Eggsy is like, you know, get away, old man. And she takes a liking to him, and he ends up going back to her tent, and, you know, she wants to get it on with him. Meanwhile, he calls his girlfriend or fiance girlfriend at this time, the princess, and says, hey, I have to sleep with someone. It's for work. Of course, she's not going to be happy with that. That creates the whole conflict that we talked about earlier. And he basically ends up going out and he has to put on a finger condom that has a tracker on it. And
again, I get that, like, they want to have their wacky, zany sex moment. But at the same time, like, the Kingsmen have all this advanced technology.
And the only way you can do it is to get through a mucous membrane.
The only tracker they can come up with, it has to be inserted through her vagina. And also keep in mind that you got to figure that most of these, in the spy game, most of these trackers would probably be placed on men. So how you going about that?
Yeah.
I just thought it was the most uncomfortable I've been in a while.
It was just wacky. What about the camera, the zoom in? It's like, yes. You know, it's like in those old videos or like where they would zoom in through someone's throat and do like an, I don't know, endoscope or whatever it's called, and it goes through the throat and down to the stomach. They literally show you going through the inside of like a vagina, like the vaginal canal where it's like
when you see his hand go down and you see, I mean, it's like it's a major close up on her underwear.
Yeah,
and like his hand slides in there and it, I mean, so I really am
how
like,
they film that?
Did he really finger her, or did they switch to some sort of like model, like a fake model?
It.
Like
she could have been a model.
I was waiting for the camera panning to stop.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It kept going.
I can't believe they did that. Like they went down, like Tom said. I can't believe that they showed that in one continuous shot or what looked like it. Placing it. So anyway, that's a tracker on her. So when she ends up going to meet up with her boyfriend, because she calls him. And she says, hey, I'm starting to have this blue stuff. And it ends up being that she was not supposed to take drugs. He told her, but she was at a music festival, so she did. And she needs the
women.
Right. So, of course, she flies to Italy to get the cure. It's not like he could ship it to her or bring it to her. You know, she has to go to the production facility to get the cure. So they go, they track her that she's there, and they end up going to that at the top of a ski lift, and they steal one vial of the cure, and there's an escape scene from there.
I liked this scene.
Yeah, I thought that was fun.
I like this scene. My only complaint about this scene is that, so they're in this like sky cab that they ski lift sort of a thing
rotates and it so and, you can like look around.
Why does it rotate?
I'm guessing that if you're seated in it, that it's so you don't have to like walk around,
but
it
shows, it's like 100% glass. So like I don't, if it exists, then I apologize, but I don't believe that. This seems like something they made up for the sake of the movie so they could spin them around and do the Highland Fling.
I get that. The way I took it, though, was that if you're in one of these, I mean, if you've ever been skiing, the lines for ski lifts get pretty long. I'm guessing that in real life, practical use, that these are packed and you can't walk around it, so it rotates so while you're on this boring lift, you can see the view all around because you're standing stationary.
Yeah, but all you do is turn your head.
Well, but if there's people all over, you'd be seeing through them and over, you know.
Well, if there's people all around me and you turn the entire platform, there are still people all around
me. No, not if you have a window view and you're looking around in a circle. Like, if you're at the window, it's going to show you.
So imagine, like, the way I imagine, because the seats are around the outside, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like a bench seat there, around
so the you're looking out the window.
And they have a window right there that as it's spinning around, they can see everything. And I'm guessing just like you are as well, but I would think that there's a bunch of people standing in the middle as well.
Yeah.
So you can't see across from me or to your left and right. But
I think it just boils down to it's another one of those things that I, you know, you're just, it
yeah,
seems
I
stupid
just,
because you're like, this whole thing is so dumb.
So
this was nauseating. That's the only thing. Like, seeing this on the big screen in the theater,
yeah.
I mean, this thing spins. I don't like spinny rides in the first place, like in real life. But if you get nauseous at all and you're seeing this on the big screen, you might want to look away because they spin them around and around and you see
it. It's like
it,
the Highland Fling. You guys are probably too young to remember that ride. Sure. There was a ride at Six Flags that did this to you. Like, you would, it would start to spin. And you'd be up against...
That's Tom's Twister. Highland Fling still exists.
Is that what... Okay, I wouldn't do the ride. I was like, I'm not doing that.
No,
man,
it's
that
Tom's
awful.
Twister. It doesn't exist, but you'd stand on the wall and you could lift your legs up. And it literally was Tom's Twister, if you know what that is.
Yeah, and then the floor would drop out. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine how many people got injured on that ride. Like, that
does
not seem like a safe ride at all.
I think it shut down because someone did fall or someone got injured on that and was, like, stuck pinned up against the wall. And they're like, nope. So, yeah, they do that. It's a pretty good action set piece. I think it looked good, aside from it being a little sickening. But, you know, and it's this is crazy comic book action again. It's totally unbelievable, but it was fun. Whiskey ends up taking his... He has an electrified, extendable lasso. And he is able to hit the cable that the thing is riding on so that it's attached by one end, but the other end of the cable is broken, so it swings them like a pendulum, just narrowly escaping the side of a cliff, and then they go on like a sled ride, and it's rocketing straight towards a retirement home. It's just like...
One of my
it's
favorite
crazy.
Lines in the movie.
Oh, it is. I laughed out loud. I thought that line
the
was
the theater
great.
I was at, this was the only thing anybody reacted to in the movie.
Really?
Was that line. Everybody else was just watched the movie in dead silence.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. It was a pretty funny line. I mean, there's a bunch of old people, you know, in the rocking chairs, whatever, like at the community home, and this thing's barreling towards them, and Eggsy ends up activating Whiskey's parachute, and the thing slows down as it's approaching and just narrowly avoids crashing through them. And then the old guy says, like, this is the most, or this is the best. This is the best I've had in
the
week.
First good that I've had in 2 weeks.
It was a good line. Like, that got a ton of laughs in my theater. So I guess your theater was not as vocal, but at least they laughed at this.
Everything else they were just like, there was no reaction to.
Interesting. What time and day, like, where
I saw it Thursday at 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I saw it Saturday night crowd, so I think my crowd was a little more lively. Like, I could tell people, I mean, they were a little too, not bad like we've talked about, but they're a little more talkative than I would have liked. Like, this crowd was, it was packed. And
so
were
was
having,
mine last Monday. I think they did a press.
At the screening.
Can't think of the word, but
invite?
Advanced screening.
Yeah.
So the packed theater, everybody loved that.
So this is where we find out that Harry thinks that Whiskey's in on it, because they get to a cabin, they're surrounded by all the Golden Circle guys. We know that because they have Golden Circle uniforms on, of course. You know, it's not enough just to have the Golden Circle, but then their hats, like an Oakley logo, except for more rounded. It's like, oh, we're part of the secret Golden Circle crew. Like, okay. But anyway, they surround the cabin. They have Gatling guns and grenade launchers and all this stuff. And Harry finds out that he sees a couple of clues that Whiskey, I mean, and this is very wink, wink at the camera. Like, I mean, they're not trying to hide it. Like, Whiskey's like, let me see that cure. Eggsy's holding it up like, ooh, like, first of all, I'd keep that in its protective vial if I'm in a crazy situation, right? But he takes it out and he's holding this little skinny vial in his fingers, where to me, like Dan getting stressed out at Mother because of all the guests, for me, when he's holding that little vial, which is their one way to save the world, I'm like, put that down. Like, that freaked me out. I'm like, it's gonna get bumped into and break, you know? Like,
yeah, I really still don't get what he saw that made him think that he was a turncoat.
I questioned it too. I maybe it was just his instincts coming back, but
I think that's what they alluded to. But the first time for us, he goes, oh, can I see it? And then he's like, turns to Harry, and like, you know, so that was just obvious for us. But he saw him break it on purpose. Eggsy didn't notice it, but we saw it. Like, he's supposed to knock into it purposefully and break the vial like that, and that's what Harry saw. So he's broke it on purpose.
I still don't feel like it conveyed all that convincingly that was purposeful.
Yeah.
And so, and I also didn't like the fact that, like, there was no other thing that where it looked like he was
betraying them. There was nothing else that made it look like he was betraying them.
He wasn't. Like, I mean, in the terms of trying to get the cure, he wasn't working with the double agent.
He wasn't working with the Golden Circle.
He just had his own
Golden Circle, whatever. Yeah. And which I like, because that's part of why Eggsy was confused, because he's still killing bad guys.
Right. Because he's not. Yeah.
So I get that. But what also irritated me to no end was Harry just being like, he's a bad guy because I said so. Not going to tell you why. Not going to point to any evidence. Not going to point to any action he took. It's just, I'm Harry, and I said he's a bad guy, so end of discussion. Yeah. And it's like, especially when he just came out of some brain damage, amnesia thing.
What Eggsy's thinking.
So there's no reason for people to believe him. So then say, I think he's a bad guy, or he's working against us because here is what I witnessed. It was
a plot device.
Lazy screenwriting. Yeah. Like, it's just, they're creating conflict for the sake of conflict. It bore no relevance or had no basis in what was going on in the story. It was just him drawing a line in the sand arbitrarily and saying, this guy's bad because I said so, and there's absolutely no reason to trust me because I literally just got shot in the goddamn face.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's just like, yeah, there's no reason you would listen.
I get it. And we're also supposed to, I mean, as an audience, we're supposed to believe that it's maybe Harry being off his game, because...
I didn't believe that for a second. As soon as he said it and Eggsy didn't believe him, I was like, "This, he's not off his game. He's right."
Oh, no, we know his film critics have seen so many movies. Like, it was predictable. Like, we got it. But the audience is supposed to question. They're supposed to be, Eggsy is us. And we're like, no, you're crazy. You're seeing butterflies. You just came out of this thing. Like, you're supposed to question if Harry really did know, like Eggsy did. But we knew it, and I knew that it was going to be him being right, and it would be revealed later.
I don't think they tried to convey. I don't think they did it well at all. Yeah. At all.
So it ends up like, oh, we need to get another sample, but they can't because the bad guy launches a missile at the production facility. So what it comes down to is that they end up having to go to the jungle to take out Poppy. So meanwhile, they drop off Whiskey at the Statesman facility. He had put the gel pack on him, so they were actually able to save him the same way they saved Harry. So they left him there in a little coma, and it's Merlin, Eggsy, and Harry go to the jungle. So they suit up. They suit up. They get all their guns and weapons and all their devices, their watches, you name it, who's what's it's galore. And then they land in the jungle. And this is something I did not see coming. They have the, you know, I really like their weapons. I thought it was clever the way they made the American weapons to parody the British ones, but they were American. They were baseballs and baseball bats. I just really liked it. I thought it was fun. Yeah. They did a good job thinking
of with that.
Hand grenade baseballs.
But you know what, again, what irritated me was when they go, so they're using
use a minesweeper?
No, they use the American weapon, and it's a hand grenade shaped like a baseball, and then the minesweeper's a baseball bat, and so Eggsy throws the baseball, and then Harry hits it with the baseball bat and launches it in, and I'm like, there's no way Harry and Eggsy could throw a baseball and hit it with a baseball bat like that. They've never done it in their lives.
How about with one eye?
There's no way that they've ever thrown a baseball and and used a baseball bat. No,
you don't,
effing way.
Wait a minute. Harry kind of raised Eggsy. You don't think they had a catch?
Not a baseball.
Cricket? Cricket catch, yeah.
Yeah, they're British.
Right, it's a different...
British.
Yeah,
it should have been a
cricket ball. Yeah. It couldn't have been for Statesman weapons, but you're right, for their skill...
Right, their skill set would not work with these weapons. Like, that's... and to me, like, I don't feel like that's me being picky.
That's a
like,
whole...
Like, these guys are supposed to be, like, every physical embodiment of British culture.
I never even thought of it that way.
And the Statesmen are supposed to be everything, every stereotype you think about American culture. So to hand the British guys a baseball and a baseball bat and then use them proficiently, go to hell.
I 100% agree with your logic. I 100% disagree with your pickiness. That is a hilarious assessment. That's so accurate. But I would never care about that in a million years.
But I mean, that it completely betrays who they are as characters.
But it's it's also an insane movie about, you know, vaginal GPS and watch guns. And
I think at that point it's GPMS.
So anyway, they have some crazy action sequences, but I didn't like that they had the minesweeper out. They literally have a minesweeper. They tease the minefield. And then Eggsy steps on a mine. I'm like, use your freaking minesweeper. What a senseless thing to have to happen. And I get that it's because they were talking or arguing, whatever. He looks away, but it's like, dude, use your minesweeper. So it ends up that Merlin sacrifices himself. He steps on the mine and ends up blowing himself up, taking all the guards with him.
Singing, by the way, too.
Yes. it goes back to a callback to John Denver. But the thing that frustrated me...
That was really dumb.
Yeah. The thing that frustrated me... about this scene, again, this is I didn't like, is you've got all these Kingsmen who are the that are these great agents. They can shoot into all this crazy action scenes. There's like five guards. Like, maybe Merlin doesn't blow himself up. Maybe he sits on the mine so they can figure out some other kind of insane, inexplicable James Bond-esque escape from it. And maybe they just shoot the five guys in the head.
And they also, by how they have him go out, they literally make you root for a suicide bomber.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's at bad guys.
Okay, but I'm sure the suicide bombers think the same thing.
Well, his wasn't it became voluntary, but he didn't want to be in that situation.
No, but he still turned himself into a suicide bomber.
But if he's going to die by taking his foot, I mean, he may as well take all the bad guys with him. But anyway, okay.
It's just interesting ways to look at this.
Yeah, you have a very interesting analysis of this film. I feel like you're in like some pretentious art house like analyzation of this movie.
I'm still stuck on last week.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, he takes him out. But my point is that, like, you've got these amazing action scenes. I get it if he had to somehow sacrifice himself so they could stealthily take out those five guys, right, and not be detected.
Yeah.
But they're going to get into a major battle out of this. They're not being stealthy. Just let Merlin stand on the thing, and they go shoot the five guards in the head and continue on their way, and maybe they come up with... Everything in this movie is ridiculous. Come up with a way to save Merlin. Right. He didn't have to sacrifice.
You brought a guy back from the dead. Yes. He was shot in the eye.
Merlin stand there for weeks as you bring him food and figure out how to defuse a mine. Like, they did not have to kill off Mark Strong on this movie. I did not like that. So that's another thing. But anyway, so they go into a big fight. All the guards fight them. They use their baseball bats, their baseballs. It's another big action sequence. And then what it comes down to is, in the end, they get to Poppy's Diner after fighting all the guys. Elton John has a pretty big cameo
in
this film.
And this was dumb. I hated all the Elton John stuff.
I thought it was funny. I did like the part when he was singing at the piano and like beating the people up, when he jumps in the air and does the Bruce Lee kick.
And like
it was so ridiculous.
And literally winks at the camera.
I liked it because it was so ridiculous. I mean, this movie's ridiculous. So I enjoyed that. But then some of the parts got a little bit like, okay, dude, we get it. But anyway, so there's a big fight sequence in there, and they get down to the diner. And meanwhile, Whiskey comes back too, and he says, oh my gosh, Harry shot me. I need to go save Eggsy needs me, you know, wink, wink. So he takes a little jet, he lands there, and they end up having a big showdown. And this is where we get the explanation that he, you know, is trying to take out the drugs, all the drug dealers and the druggies, so that he can avenge his wife's death, and also statesmen can make more money, because they don't already have $3 trillion like Champagne showed us. Yeah. We need their stock to go up. Literally, it's worth, is it $3 billion or $3 trillion? Like, they have a ton of resources. I feel like it was trillion, but you know what I mean? I feel like there were like three sets of zeros and the three in front. But anyway, so he's really concerned about that. So they have a big showdown. He ends up going through a meat grinder, like we saw one of the bad guys earlier in the film. We won't get too much into that. You know, they have a big fight scene. And this is my least favorite action scene of the entire film, which is the one big callback to the best action scene in the first one. The first one's the church scene, which is amazing. One, because we hadn't seen it yet. It was very stylized. It was well choreographed. It was a lot of fun. In this movie, it's like a I feel like it's a 10-minute sequence of Whiskey fighting Harry and Eggsy in the diner, and it was so drawn out and so boring.
Yeah. It was just a lazy knockoff of what they did in the original.
But, like, the original was good. Like you said, I mean, it was a knockoff, but, like, it was not good, and it was very lazy and did not keep my interest, and it went on at least twice as long as it needed to.
Yeah.
I was in it, and this is 2 hours and 10 minutes in, probably. So, like, you know, if it was good, maybe I would have thought differently, but at this point, I'm like, wrap it the F up.
Well,
like,
and especially compounding problems is, you know, is I liked Whiskey, and so I was already mad at what they were doing to him. Yeah.
Right. That character would have been great. They're talking about, and who knows if it will happen, but Mark Miller and Matthew Vaughn in an interview said that they're open to a spinoff, actually having Statesman movies.
Yeah.
Like, that's a great character, and you just killed him off. So, like, now you're stuck with tequila and champagne and whoever else they come up with. If, you know.
It was stupid.
So they end up killing him, and then they need to get – they're on a time limit where all the people infected by drugs are almost to stage four, which is death. So there's the four stages, and everyone's about to die, so they need to get the –
because everyone took the drugs at the exact same moment, so they're all at the exact same phase of infection.
We didn't even talk about the stadium that they're all being housed in these cages.
Yeah, again, a crazy display of, I mean, that commentary on housing drug users like they're animals in the zoo or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's just another commentary, but they need to get the cure released, or the hundreds of millions of people are going to die across the world. So they end up, I thought it was going to be some kind of a truth serum, but they ended up actually giving Poppy heroin, and they said, you're going to be in a more relaxed state, I guess. And, they say that, you know, you need to give us the password. So she ends up giving him the password, Viva Las Vegan. Get it? It's Viva Las Vegan, and then she, like, dies. They say that she should have, like, 8 minutes to live, because the way that they blackmail her is, they say, you've just been given heroin, so you know that you have about 8 minutes to live. Either give us the password and we'll give you a cure, we'll track one down for you, or you're going to die. And so she gives them the password. That's how she actually... that's how they get her to give it to them, because she thinks she's going to get a cure, but it ends up that he gave her way more heroin, I guess, than someone would usually take, so the effects were super accelerated. So she just dies,
thankfully,
within seconds.
Too soon, to where she got that password.
Well, right, exactly. And so they end up putting the password in. The drones deliver all the cures. People are released. The president is put behind bars.
Is impeached.
I
thought it was interesting that all the news footage was Fox News. And I think my favorite moment of the film was when they showed the Fox News screen and the Chiron at the bottom said President impeached. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah.
But I also,
like, Fox News would never display it. They'd be like, outrage, scandal.
But I also, you know, one of the things that, not to get overly political, but screw it. You know, one of the things that
it's your birthday. Go for it.
Sure.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. One of the things that Trump being in office, I think, has illustrated is that these sorts of endings to movies are no longer believable in any way, shape, or form. And that's not Kingsman's fault. This isn't a knock at the movie. But this idea of, like, the president did something bad and now everyone is outraged and he will be impeached. It's like, no. If the president did that, there would be at least 30% of the country that would say, yeah, screw the druggies. They should have died. I don't care. They would rally behind him. Like, it would never be that cut and dried. There would be someone, sizable numbers of someone's, who would be like, nope, think that was a great solution.
Also, I don't think that he would instantly in this film be impeached like that, because you have the testimony of one advisor.
Yeah,
like, I mean I don't think that she can just be like, oh yeah, this is what he said, and like, impeached in jail.
It would still instantly take months.
Fake news.
Yeah,
it would take months on a best case scenario.
Absolutely.
Removing politics from the equation.
Yeah.
If the president, whoever this hypothetical president is, literally, like, shot a kid in the face while, I don't know, eating a baby. It would still take months to have him impeached.
Yeah, like, and this is supposed to be, like, right after the whole thing goes down. So, again, another small complaint, but it's like, that doesn't really work like that. So, he's impeached and they put handcuffs on him, and she says that she'll advise the next person, whatever, in the interim. So happy days there. Harry is back to his old self, I guess. And so now we're supposed to believe that, I mean, he's a full agent again. I like it when I can't remember if it was champagne or tequila, but I do like it when they called him Galahad Senior. Like, I just thought it was that, funny writing.
Yeah,
he goes, we want to invite one of you to be a part of the Statesman. He's like, you need to work on this code name thing. I think it was tequila, because he's like, this whole thing isn't working. I think Galahad Senior, blah, blah. So I just thought it was funny writing. Yeah. And but then this minor plot point is that Halle Berry's character is always doing the Merlin thing. She's not in the field. She's just advising them through the glasses and all that. You know, she's like Q or whatever for James Bond. Right. She wants to be a full field agent, and Whiskey, the bad guy that he was, now that we know he's a bad guy, was always voting her down, and it has to be unanimous to have a new agent. And now they all vote her in, so Halle Berry's the new Statesman,
she becomes Whiskey.
Yeah, so she is Whiskey, and they go back to do their Kingsman thing. I guess they reopen the tailor shop. Kingsman is reinstated. Jeff Bridges says they have access to all their funds again, you know. And that happens again, and then the way it ends, Eggsy gets married to the princess, you know. They have their big wedding. He's in his prince outfit with all his medals and all that. And then at the very end, you see Channing Tatum suited up with a bowler hat, and, you know, outside of the Kingsman shop.
Yeah.
And it ends.
Who cares?
Tom doesn't pull any punches when he doesn't like him.
And I really thought they were going to go with Galahad, and his name would be Kid Galahad.
Kid Galahad.
Because there's an Elvis movie called Kid Galahad. Yeah. I just thought that would have been
interesting.
I thought that was the direction
I don't know if they'll do it, because there's been two films essentially where both of them have been Galahad. And so I can't imagine in the next movie that it's like, oh, hey, and you're... So, like, they just change his name. Like, I don't know how they're going to approach that in the third one. I just don't feel like at this point you can change one of their code names. So
yeah.
I don't know. I'll be interested. I'm curious to see how they change.
Yeah, because they can't both have the same name, so somebody's got to give it up.
Wouldn't it be weird, though, if all of a sudden, but one of them wasn't Galahad, one of them was Percival or whatever.
Right.
You know? They got enough names floating around. There's two of them left in the entire organization.
Sure,
they freed up some names. Real quick, though, in the first movie, so Eggsy's dad, his dad was a Kingsman? Isn't that how?
Yes.
And he was in the army with Merlin and Galahad, but he took on the Galahad name, right? He didn't take on his dad's code name.
Because Harry was mentoring him, and Harry died, so he took on Galahad.
Right. So I wonder, probably what will happen was he'll take on whichever one, maybe it was Percival, but he'll take on probably the dad's name.
Yeah.
Just now that I think of it.
Yeah, sense. I guess.
It'd make more sense.
Sure, why not?
Throw up for grabs, take
something's
your dad's old moniker. So.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Why start now?
So, yeah. I mean, I didn't love it. I enjoyed it. I was entertained. I thought it was fun. I don't think it was like a D, F, like some people are saying. And I also don't think it was a total retread. A lot of people told me it was a lot like the first movie.
There's a lot of callbacks.
But I didn't, just because they did the bar scene, like, I get why they did it, to have him be off his game. Like, you know what he's capable of.
I don't think that was a retread at all. In fact, my complaint is it wasn't.
Right, it was sort of, I think, I mean, they did that big car chase sequence, which I didn't see anything like in the first one. I mean, I think there was a lot of stuff that was different, so it wasn't even boring or anything like from that standpoint. I think it was too long. Yeah. I think they missed some logic and some plot points or whatever, but like, I was entertained.
Yeah, when I think of the first film, there's a lot of parts of it I like, but everybody, like, if you ask what they remember from the first film, it's that church scene.
It's the church scene.
And I don't think this movie has that. In fact, the only thing that, like, I think that I will remember, because I was so uncomfortable, was that sex scene in the middle of the movie. It was like, when I think back on this movie, oh, yeah, it had that in it.
Like, I'm pretty sure I laughed out loud just because of how crazy that was.
Right.
They did, like, the, I don't know, I call it an endoscope. I don't know what that's called. I feel like, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, when you get that view from inside, like, I've never seen anything like that.
I don't want to.
Right. I thought it was funny that they did that, and they obviously were trying to get the shock factor.
Yeah.
But, again, what it comes down to is that final scene with Whiskey is their version of the church scene. I mean, they do the same stylized stuff, the cuts,
and it's not memorable.
And
wasn't as good.
And when the bodies, just like the first one, the way that they do it, it's supposed to look like a tracking shot of sorts, but they put a body in front of the camera, and then it looks like they're coming out the other side. That's how they connect them all, and it works in the first one. And this one, like Tom mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, sometimes a body would go in front of the camera, and then it would be jarring from the other side. Like, it didn't look as continuous.
It didn't look fluid. It looked like they were at a totally different
size
angle
or different angle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the light changed. It was weird. Whatever it was, some of the cuts were just like, whoa, like, that was clearly not as, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, I was disappointed. I like I said, I really liked the first one, so I'm not against this type of movie. Like, I thought it was great.
First one's great.
And but this one just like did nothing for me. I was bored.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if, you know, it's obviously you only have one chance to make a first impression, and the first one introduced us to this world, and especially people that hadn't read the book, but it introduced us to this world. We got to see the tryouts. We got to see, you know, this whole world that existed, amazing action sequences, you know, good comedy. You know, we got all that stuff from it. And in this movie, you pretty much take away Kingsman. It gets blown up really early on.
You take away Harry.
You take away Harry, or at least Harry that we know for the most part. So you take away most of that stuff, and really what you're left with is Statesman, who you got whiskey, but then that's taken from you.
Right.
So you know what I mean? We actually lose a lot. Not only were we introduced to this great world in the first one, but then they kind of take it away from us.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really hurts it in the end.
Yeah, I agree. I just you see this problem a lot with sequels, where they end up undoing a lot of the stuff from the first one because they didn't anticipate making a lot more. And so it's like this movie is kind of a classic version of that, of they undo everything. They take away, in order to have a plot, they take away all the things you liked about the first one so they can give them back to you at the end. But what happens is you end up not liking it because all the things you liked are gone now.
Yeah, the first one didn't even... It didn't need a sequel. It didn't set up for anything at all. It could have just been on its own. And they built this world, and I'm happy they made it, I think. But the second one, it clearly leads to that there's going to be another one.
Right.
At least I think that's what the significance of Channing Tatum at the end of it was, because he didn't do anything throughout the whole movie, but suddenly he's dressing like a Kingsman at the end, and I'm like...
Like, they sent him to go work with them either on a mission or something. But... The thing is, they also, like I mentioned earlier, want to spin it off into Statesman. Yeah. So I think that there will be a Kingsman sequel. I think they'll end up getting one. But if I don't know if this would make enough money to justify it, but they're also thinking of doing that. So there could be two different series now based on it. But
they got a lot to make up for, I think. Like, I enjoyed this one, but, like, you know, having discussed it with you guys, and I understand the flaws in it, but it's the first one still holds way superior to me.
Yeah. Easily.
If you want a good video recovery, go watch Kingsman the first
right
one.
Yeah.
Or, you know, another fun movie, if you talk about action sequences, this is a film that I feel is kind of underground, that you know, I think a lot of us have seen it. Joe loves it, but I don't know that it's that the mainstream audiences have. Smoke and Aces with Ryan Reynolds. I mean, that wasn't a huge blockbuster.
No, it wasn't.
Hit. It's really a really fun action. Mark Strong might even be in it. I don't know if I'm mistaken there, but it's a really fun action movie with Ryan Reynolds. A lot of gun scenes and fights and action stuff. It's a good movie. If you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend
it. I'm guessing I haven't, because I can't recall what happens in it, but the name sounds familiar. Like, I'm picturing the movie.
It has a really strong cult following. I know that.
Yeah, so. It's one of those that kind of like...
Who directed
Boondock
it?
Saints. You know, it's one of those that came around. Let's see here. Smoke and Aces. Someone you know... it is Joe Carnahan. I mean, you know Joe Carnahan, though, that name. He did he did the movie Narc. I don't know if you ever saw that with Ray Liotta.
Actually have that movie.
Then he did Smoke and Aces. He did the A-Team reboot. He did The Gray with Liam Neeson. He did Stretch, which is another one Joe and I have talked about, but that has... oh, my God. He's just totally... Night Owl 2 from Watchmen. Patrick Wilson. He's a limo driver, and he just goes into this crazy action sequences. Like, he's a limo driver, but then ends up gun scenes and chases. But anyway, so yeah, he's done some stuff. He's not a huge director, but Smoke and Aces, if you want a really good action movie that's not necessarily realistically grounded, but just crazy. Like, they're in a hotel, I believe, and Ryan Reynolds is a cop or CIA, FBI, one of those. And there's just lots of guns, lots of fights in this hotel, and elevators and rooms getting destroyed. And it's a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, I guess that's it for this episode. We will go around the table, and people can say where to find them.
This is Brad. You can find me on ReviewSTL.com.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert, or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you want to continue the conversation online, tell us how wrong we were about Kingsman. You can do that at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, join the League of Show Sharers. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes. Go there, rate, review, subscribe, all that fancy stuff. So that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. I don't know what next week is. The two big movies, I don't know which one we'll do, or maybe we'll do both, is... American Made, the Tom Cruise, which looks good.
It does.
And and Battle of the Sexes, the Billie Jean King tennis
match. Does that
match
come out
short.
Here? I know that it opened limited, I guess, last week. Is it in St. Louis next week?
Correct. It okay. opens wide next week, I believe. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing both of those.
Me too.
American Maid, I saw a trailer before this and before The Mummy, which made me even hate The Mummy more.
I know, because I was like, show me that movie.
Yeah. Like, how do you do that to us? But it looks kind of like Blow.
Yeah.
But with Paul,
like a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
but Blow had its fun moments.
Yeah.
I get what you mean, though. But it's kind of one of those movies where it seems like it follows a lot of the style of Blow. And
yeah.
It has Pablo
or
Escobar.
War Dogs.
Yeah, exactly. And so, with the popularity of Narcos, this is another movie with Pablo Escobar that's supposed to be taking place kind of during the same time period.
Well, they touch on this briefly in Narcos,
yeah.
what they're doing with the planes. And
right.
stuff. Yeah.
So there's a connection there. And Tom Cruise looks like he's playing maybe one of his more zany characters, more of a, not quite a Night and Day, but, you know, having fun with it, like kind of crazy.
But it's also a true story. So, like,
yeah
it's interesting because it looks like it's kind of wacky, but
yeah.
also it's a true story, and it's also kind of serious, so it'll be I'm interested to see it.
But
and I haven't said that about a Tom Cruise movie in a long time.
Right, but then Battle of the Sexes looks pretty good. That's also based on a true story.
Yeah.
Emma Stone and Steve Carell, like, it looks hilarious. Like the stuff that I guess the Steve Carell character did to
Yeah,
to undermine the women's type. Like,
I know the story. I
did.
Yeah, because it's a crazy story.
Yeah,
Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll do both. It depends on our mood. So
there you go.
So that's what you have to look forward to next week, maybe. And so thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Gila is stripped of her leadership role and reassigned to become a pleasure unit.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.